From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day that the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour. This indeed is the day the Lord has made. We know that for a certainty. So let us rejoice and be glad in it. And we are glad to welcome in Betty May to the Bishop's Hour. Betty joins us by phone. Betty, good day to you.
Hi, how are you?
Doing very well. I was just reading about you and your ministry in the Catholic Herald. And I don't even know if you have your issue of the Catholic Herald yet.
Not yet. It hasn't arrived in the mail yet.
Well, it's a beautiful article about your ministry. Do you call it by WOM? Do you call it WOM?
Well, no. We call it Works of Mercy Homeless Outreach. And but when we write things down, we write WOM because it's just much easier.
It is much easier, indeed. And it's all at Good Shepherd Parish in Elk Grove, mm-hmm. right there on Racquet Court.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful church. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, it really is. We are very blessed.
I was at an event there, like a vocations dinner a few years ago, and it was in the hall, you know, and we went directly into the hall, and we had dinner, mm-hmm. and we had a program and everything, and then your pastor at the time said to me, he says, I got to show you the church, and I was just, it knocked my socks off. It was so beautiful.
Did we have the stained glass yet?
Excuse me?
Was there stained glass at that time?
I'm trying. This was probably about 10 years ago.
Oh, you have to come back.
Okay.
You have
to good.
Come back. It's even more stunning.
Gives me a good reason to come back.
Very good.
Yeah. So tell us about the Works of Mercy ministry there at the parish, how this got started.
So several years ago, many years ago, we would take out, you know, leftovers from events and stuff out to the streets of the homeless. And that would be just when things, you know, an organization had an event, which was frequent at Good Shepherd, pre-COVID, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And so no one wanted to waste the food. So we would take it out to the street. You know, we'd call in different people and
sure.
and take our cars out and deliver. However, you know, we weren't allowed to by the county. It was something that we needed to be permitted for.
Right.
And so the reason is that they want to make sure that you're providing food that is safe, you know,
exactly.
for the homeless.
Exactly.
Last thing they need is, you know, have additional issues out there. And so during COVID, what God was doing is he kept putting more and more things in our path. When we thought all events have stopped, so, okay, we will not have much. And then we said, you know, hey, we probably ought to do something, you know, to deliver food out there because they need it more than ever, right? People mm-hmm. are going to be in their homes instead of out there on the streets because obviously there are other organizations that do deliver food to the streets.
Sure.
And at that time, we would run into some of those. And then during COVID, we weren't running into anybody out there. And so one of the ministries said, how can we get involved in what you're doing with the homeless? And so that's when we, as a parish, decided that we would make an official ministry out of this, mm-hmm. and it was named Works of Mercy. Before, it was just helping the homeless, right?
Sure.
And so we went to the county, and applied for a permit to distribute food, and they have a set of best practices that we were to follow. In addition, the catalyst was more and more things were coming to us. People were giving us stuff for the homeless very specifically where, again, before it was more event-driven. And so that, you know, meant that we needed to be more organized. And, you know, and so we followed once we received our permit, you know, we have been feeding about 100 at least a minimum of 100 people each week, and with really a good array of food, you know, not only healthy things, because we do, yes, we want to make sure that we're giving out healthy, you know, fresh fruits and solid proteins and all that, but we give them fun food as well, you know, like maybe a soda or, you know, a candy bar or something. They love the treats.
Yeah, you know, my wife and I have done a little bit of that kind of work, and you know, we debate it a little bit, and we say, hey, we'd love to have a treat like this. And, yeah, the treats win.
I mean,
obviously healthy food as well, but the treats win, you know. There's nothing like a Hershey bar, especially if you're down and out.
Yes. And we provide two beverages to each lunch, you know, so that not only do they get a water, but they get a second beverage as well. And that's a random, based off of mostly donations. So, but we always include one of the larger water bottles in there. Hydration is critical to our existence.
So are you feeding them one meal for 100 people a week or daily for a week? Explain how that works.
So what we do is we randomly selected Mondays to put the meals together.
Uh-huh.
And that was based on availability of the people that were wanting to help get those made. And, oh, something else. We used to do a lot of, like, home-cooked stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the permit, we needed to change what we were providing. And, you know, like, for instance, we can't prepare raw meat. We can't prepare raw eggs, but pretty much everything else is available to us.
Mm-hmm.
And so our good friend, can I name a name?
Sure.
Mark Cassell from Dos Coyotes, he is the executive chef there. When we have meats and need for meat to be cooked, he has been generous in providing that because, you see, it's through a professional kitchen, and so he's been able to, like, cook turkeys for us and chicken and, you know, other things that we are not, and we want to follow our permit guidelines, you know, to make sure that we're in good standings with the county. But so anyway, we are providing once a week on Monday mornings. We prepare 100 lunches.
Mm-hmm.
And our school, St. Elizabeth Ann Seton School, which is the Elk Grove Catholic School, for all the parishes, provides with their leadership team, they provide peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and bag lunches, which is wonderful. So they do this before school. The kids put them together before school and package them, and then deliver them to us into the kitchen, and then we prepare the rest of the meals, whether it's, you know, additional, you know, bologna sandwiches, or whether we're doing turkey pot pie or something like that. We put those together, and then we kit them up into bags, and then we package them into our coolers that are food safe, and then we take them out to the encampments along Elk Grove, where we, you know, the encampments in Elk Grove, but also into anywhere in Sacramento County.
Wow. Well, St. Elizabeth Ann Seton, of course, is Marcy Green's school. She's the principal out there.
Correct,
And I know what great public service they do there.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, they really do. And the students are also participating at St. Vincent de Paul and handing out food to the poor on Mondays. So, I mean, they are completely engaged in helping, you know, where needed.
Now, I was reading the Catholic Herald story, and I saw something about pulled pork sandwiches in there.
Mm, they were so good.
If you need a taster, I'm your guy.
Yeah, once in a while, when certain meats are made available to us, we can do specialties like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot of fun. It's really important for these families out there, you know, that are out on the streets to to get something that's enjoyable, something that would want.
Oh. Yeah, it is just so important. It's probably one of the few joys in a very difficult life, and it's certainly nutrition and it's sustenance and it's all that, but it should be a joy as well.
Yes, and it is, and we provide clothing and shoes and socks and outerwear and blankets and pillows and all kinds of survival. Mm-hmm. Things, toothbrushes, toothpaste, etc. We don't give out, the toothbrushes and stuff weekly, but we do that on a periodic basis so that they have the oral hygiene and hygiene products that are required out there. And after, that big storm that we had.
Yes, about 2 weeks ago, yeah.
Yes, we went out the following day.
Oh, my.
And
I've heard it was devastating for the homeless. Yeah.
It was. People squishing in bare feet across the mud to come to us so that they can have something. Most of them were still wet. I mean, their clothing was wet.
Sure. Their blankets were wet. Everything was wet. And their tents, some of them just blew away.
Right. And some people, quite a number, there are a lot of communities out there in the homeless encampments. Right, where they look out for each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so their night was spent keeping, themselves and rescuing others from their peril, which is, really awesome. And so handing out blankets the next day and new socks and shoes and stuff was, it was so critical. And by the grace of God, we happened to have them because we didn't plan for the storm.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Just by the grace of God. He's provided as he always does.
Now, most of the shoes and socks, blankets, are those things donated to you?
Yes. Everything that we have, with some rare exceptions, are donated by people around the community.
Mm-hmm.
a lot of people want to provide tangible goods.
Right.
And, when they ask me, well, can I make a donation to Works of Mercy? I say, we prefer goods over money, because people, it means something to know that they gave new socks, and that they're going, or tarps, or even new blankets. I mean, obviously, we don't have a preference over new or used blankets or coats, but we always ask people, if you're going to donate clothing or blankets or whatever, we really need them to be freshly washed, not something you pull out of the closet from 6 months or a year ago.
Right.
And so these are all donated goods, and it is amazing how many times God has provided for the one individual. One day this lady came up, and it was the middle of winter, last winter, and she had no shoes on. And I said, what happened to your shoes? She's somebody that we see, frequently. And she said, and people were cleaning up the camp, and they accidentally threw away my shoes.
Wow.
I said, you have nothing else? And she said, no, I don't. I said, well, somebody donated one pair of shoes to me today, and that's all I have. And I said, let's take a look at it. Of course, they were her size, and I happened to have a pair of socks as well.
Hmm.
So by the grace of God, she was taken care of.
So, it's becoming rarer with charity organizations or relief organizations to accept goods. Most of them do want cash. I've heard this in many of the fire relief that there were so many things that were needed that they got donated way too many somethings, and they said they'd be better off with cash. I mean, not the recipients, but the organization, because they could go out and purchase exactly what was needed. But from a from a donor standpoint, I know exactly what you're saying. The turkey drive that the Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services has, and you take the kids to the grocery store and you tell them this is going to serve a family of four, or this is a family of eight, and they just can't stop putting things in the basket because they're thinking about that, and there's
exactly.
There's such a real, and I know Loaves and Fishes will accept a lot of donations of, you know, bottled water. And well, they put out the alarm after the storm about we need blankets, we need socks, we need, and you know, the goal isn't to make the giver feel good, but there's something about giving some, like a blanket that you know somebody's going to keep somebody warm, that is very heartening.
Yeah, and what's neat is sometimes, because, you know, I don't know everybody who is actually donating, you know, I don't know them personally, but sometimes somebody will say, hey, I have this and that, and I can account for, and to text them back and say, you know what, that blanket went to this person who, you know, was down and out, and, I mean, and that matters. It matters for people to, I can't do that, obviously, all the time, because that would be impossible, with the, especially with how generous the community is. And, but it's certainly, like when we had, I don't know if you, I'm pretty sure it was an article about the Adopt-A-Family that we did.
Right.
Okay, so where we had, we'd been asked by Elk Grove Heart to participate in helping three families move into permanent housing from temporary shelters. And so one of the women, well, one woman lived in Elk Grove, owns, the city of Elk Grove owns some homes, and they use those for temporary housing when people are in need. And then, but that's, they can only be there for like 6 months or something like that, to 8 months, I'm not sure the time frame. And new apartments opened up in Elk Grove, and the first 12 were allocated to move these, some people from the community into permanent housing. And we put out a appeal to our parish and asked for very specific things, you know, like, because what we did is we basically did a needs assessment and then put into action a list of things that we needed. We put the appeal out to our parish, and it was unbelievable how generous the parish was. I mean, so generous that they were overgiving from what they committed to give, you know, whether it was a couch or a chair or a, you know, a dining table or a gift card, It was amazing. We had such an abundance that, I mean, out in the parking lot, you know, after taking care of all these families, to provide them with everything, their beds, their furniture, pots and pans, et cetera. And I had happened to have some food left over from St. Vincent de Paul in my car, and I said to a young teenager, hey, could your family use this, by the way? You know, I just, this is left, and they weren't perishable goods. And he said, well, I think so. And his mom came over with another a teenage sister, you know, the young man's sister. And I said, how are you guys? Are you part of the heart group? You know, because they were adopted by, some were adopted by other families or other churches. And they said, oh, no, we got in here by the lottery. And I said, oh, so what do you need? And they said, well, we just went to the Goodwill and got our first things. We don't have anything right now. All we have is one bed, and now we have two hard chairs. I said, wow, do you have bedding for the bed? And they said, no. I said, okay, here, in my car, I happen to have all the bedding that they needed for that bed. Lamps, new, because people were so giving. I had a kitchenware, wonderful pots and pans and everything that they didn't have any. And it was so amazing. So in addition to that, of course, we went back and supplied them with, you know, dressers and all the rest, the other two beds they needed, and, you know, cabinetry and towels and all that stuff, because people are so giving.
Wow. Wow. So are people donating something that they have, or are they going out and purchasing something and donating it?
Both. So people were so excited about this. They'd buy a whole new set of pots and pans, mm-hmm. or mixing bowls. We said gently used or new, mm-hmm. except for certain things we said, please just, you know, when it comes to, you know, particular things, we said, like toothbrushes, obviously, we said new.
Right.
But people were just like a brand new microwave.
Wow.
I mean, in the box. And we also, I know it sounds silly, but when you think of setting up a home, let's say your kid's going away to college, right?
Yep.
And this is going to be their first apartment. You have to think of
You're
everything.
Hitting home. You're talking to somebody that just took his daughter off to college.
Yes, and they have nothing.
Yeah.
So we said, well, we'd like a donation of brand new spices, variety of spices.
Mm.
So each of the families got a spice rack full of new spices. Oh, my gosh. People were over the moon.
Yeah.
Over the moon.
And it's the kind of thing you might not even think about.
Yeah. But anyway, God's been really, really good to, you know, connect us with people in the community, with our own parish. We're connected with Loaves and Fishes to actually bring things to them
mm-hmm.
that we have access of. And St. Vincent de Paul in Elk Grove provides us with goods. St. Vincent de Paul in West Sac provides us with goods.
Mm-hmm.
And we make sure that when we have more than we can use, we pass that along to the other charities that are in need so that nothing's wasted.
Yeah, it's amazing to see the cooperation and coordination between people that are trying to help.
Yeah, it's basically logistics and distribution,
mm-hmm.
but God leading it.
Yeah.
That's the boss.
Yeah. So when you first got the permits from the county, was it an ordeal? Was it easy? Was there red tape? And I completely understand that the county's in the business of helping. You know, they're not there to thwart you for sure.
It was an ordeal. They mm-hmm. wanted us to be permitted, but they didn't have any real permit that addressed this specific task of going out to encampments. And when we go out, we go to places that are further away from services. So if somebody's down the street from Loaves and Fishes, right, then we don't serve that community except for with clothing and stuff like that sometimes. But, and of course, Loaves and Fishes provides clothing as well. But we tend to go out further in more remote locations, you know, and along the river and that sort of thing. But the permitting process, because there really wasn't people weren't asking. They were just doing, right,
mm-hmm.
out there. They had to figure out how to permit us. And it was more of an ordeal probably because you couldn't go down to a office and see the whites of their eyes and explain everything.
Right.
You had to call in to somebody who was working, who would have to answer their phone from picking up their voicemails, and then they're calling from home. And then their colleagues were all working remotely, too. So the whole, you know, can't walk over to the next office and
right.
chat with somebody
right.
was going on. So I think that had an impact on it. But they said they were they had been working on figuring out a process for people to be permitted to be able to do what we're doing. And I encourage, you know, anybody who has a heart for serving the homeless and, you know, wants to start this in their communities or their parishes to go through that permitting process so that you do know what the best practices are as far as food handling and that sort of thing. And it also gives you a freedom not to have to worry about getting stopped by the rangers saying, sorry, you don't have a permit, you have to cease and desist and,
mm-hmm.
you know, that sort of thing.
So with food, are people primarily purchasing the food and bringing it to you?
We have it, yes, actually, that, you know, we just had one gentleman who went crazy at the Costco Business Center and literally brought two shopping carts full of items to us.
Wow.
I
was just at the Costco Business Center. It's a pretty phenomenal place.
I know. It makes you want to buy everything in there.
Oh, my gosh. The cold room in there was about the size of a football field. I almost froze to death.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
That place is crazy.
Yeah.
But anyway, so, yeah, people do purchase stuff. Or let's say they may have a luncheon or something, and they have leftover bag chips, you know, or store-bought cookies.
Sure.
That sort of thing. People have donated fresh from the grocery store lunch meats and cheeses and stuff like that we are allowed to use, as long as we can use anything that's pre-cooked. Like next week, Monday, we'll be cooking extra long hot dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're fully cooked and all we need to do is reheat them.
All right.
So we do get food donated, and sometimes we'll have to, water's an issue.
Sure.
We do have a lot of donations of water, but because we use so much of it, sometimes we run out and we'll have to buy it, but that's okay.
Right? I know from the times I've talked to the people at Loaves and Fishes, that's almost the number one thing they mention.
Yeah.
Because they just go through it so fast.
Right. I said we provide a larger water bottle, but seriously, you're supposed to be drinking four or five of those a day.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And we're giving one. So it isn't going to keep them hydrated, but it at least provides them with some hydration.
So once you have all the lunches put together, then how do you distribute them? You distribute them right away? Do they all get distributed on Monday, I presume?
Yes, they do. Our Deacon Ramel Aquinas has typically requested a certain amount of lunches, and we would provide them to his door, and then he would distribute them later in the afternoon after work.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of it we pack into our vans and trucks, and we take directly out to the streets. In the summer, we were freezing water bottles so that things would stay cold.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, you know, they really like having that frozen water.
Sure.
And then when we have hot foods, we purchased these hot, cold coolers that keep things 4 hours hot or 4 hours cold.
Mm-hmm.
And so our hot foods stay hot, and, you know, we're required by our permit as well to have it to remain at a certain temperature.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we have a hot food, it gets packaged by itself in these hot cold coolers, and then we pack up the non-perishable stuff into the lunch bags, and
mm-hmm.
then we hand out, you know, the hot lunches, you know, with it. But we generally do go out right away and distribute. So we get out there about lunchtime, or a little bit earlier than lunchtime.
And these coolers actually work pretty good, don't they?
It's remarkable. Yes. It is remarkable how things stay hot or cold. When we first used them the first time, and I opened up the cooler from the car, and this, mind you, it's 100 and something out,
mm-hmm.
right? It was like sticking my hand in the refrigerator. I was shocked at how well they worked. And we've tested it out where, you know, hot food has been in there a long time, and it stays as hot as when we put it in.
Boy, that's remarkable.
Yeah, so it is.
Are they metallic? What are they?
No, they're lightweight foam.
Hmm.
And you'd think they wouldn't be very durable, but they were expensive. That was something we did buy,
right,
you know,
right.
out of our funds, because it's not a supply that is out there normally. But they're very lightweight, and so they themselves aren't adding weight to our load. And they stack nicely. The lids fit on so snug that no air or anything gets in them. That obviously keeps them. It's a very dense foam, and they're dishwasher proof and everything. If you have a big enough dishwasher.
I was going to say. So how do you decide who gets these? And, I mean, obviously there's more than 100 homeless people out there.
Well, sometimes we follow a general route. Well, we follow a general route. So we want to make sure we stop, you know, especially if Deacon Rommel is not able to go out. We stop in the places in Elk Grove that he would have, you know, normally distributed to. And the thing is, people move around. You know, I'm not sure if you're aware of all the Caltrans sweeps that have been going on. Well, these people get displaced, and they move on to other locations. And it's since during COVID, at the beginning of it, everybody was sedentary. And so it was easy to find everybody because they weren't moving around. Some of the rules were lifted, and then Caltrans, you know, went ahead and broke up a bunch of, well, most of these encampments that are out there along the roadways and under bridges and that sort of thing. Then you basically have to go find where, you know, you can ask the homeless. They kind of know where other people are going. There's a young family that we've pretty much consistently provided meals to. They have this really broken down trailer, and they have two kids that are, it's a multi-generational set of trailers and cars that they live in. And so when they moved, we actually asked, well, where were they moved to? And went out and sought them. And now we see there's a whole new area that we're serving. So the difficulty is when we're out. And so you don't want to form a big line of people in need and to say, oh, I only have three, you know. So we try to target areas based on the volume that we have left.
Wow. It's just a remarkable story. And then the rest of the week, hopefully other groups are taking over?
I'm hoping. It's not like it was before COVID. And I'm hoping that people are out there serving. We do see pizza boxes and stuff like that in certain locations that get left. But things we object to are when somehow, I don't know why, but people leave boxes of bread, just like loaves of French bread and stuff like that. And we don't ever leave food behind in case somebody comes to find it.
Yeah.
We say, would you like a lunch? Some people don't want anything. Right?
Sure.
They say, no, thank you. And we had a young person who's just joined our group. She's a college student, and she was out the first time distributing with us a couple of weeks ago. And she was, you know, trying to help her with the kind of the method that we use of not surprising people and, you know, training her on how to manage, you know, working with people out there in the field. And she's like, that woman's out there, and I know she needs something. I feel it. God's telling me she needs something. And I said, but she said no. And we have to respect that. And she said, can't we just leave it here? And I said, no, it's really not a good practice just to leave food on the ground, because then not many people are going to come by, even homeless people, come by a bag of food and say, oh, I'm going to eat that, you know.
Right.
And so then we moved to another encampment, and explained as this moldy bread was all over the ground. I said, this is why we don't, right? This is because there are other people that say yes, and that they have a need, they have a want to the meal. And so and same with clothing and all the other supplies, right? The blankets and stuff. We don't just leave them out because then we see them and they're in piles.
Right.
And so we give out what people need or ask for.
Well, Betty, it's a real honor to talk with you, and thanks for all you and your great organization, the Works of Mercy there at Good Shepherd Parish in Elk Grove does. And you're doing the Lord's work out there in the vineyard, and I think you've inspired a lot of people today. So thanks for taking the time to be with us. Thanks for all you do, and hope our paths cross again soon.
Thank you. It's, again, by the grace of God that we're able to do this. He's the one giving.
Indeed. God bless. Thanks so
Thank
much.
You. Yeah. Okay. Have a nice evening.
That's Betty May, Good Shepherd Parish's Works of Mercy Ministry. And if you're in that area, check it out. It does a lot of great work. We'll take a quick break. Back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org.
Hi, this is Brian Visitation, Director of Media and Communications for the Diocese of Sacramento. You're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Brian, for all you do here in the Diocese of Sacramento. And we're pleased now to go to the Diocese of Oakland, and we're joined by Joseph Nufable, Coordinator of Youth Ministry and RCIA for the Diocese of Oakland. Joseph, good day to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. How you guys doing?
How'd I do with your last name?
That was good. That's better than most telemarketers, I think.
Glad to hear it. Appreciate you taking the time to be with us. Tell us a little bit about what you do there in the Diocese of Oakland.
Yeah. So I'm pretty new, actually. I mean, I've been in youth and young adult ministry. Started right out of college, so about 7-8 years, and now I'm serving in a new capacity for the Chancery Office, and you know, it's pretty much trying to serve those who serve our young people, and then also serve those who organize the catechumenate in their parishes. So two different hats. I try not to wear them both at one.
Yeah.
Sometimes they do, but, you know, yeah, it's serving the diocese in that way right now.
And how long have you been doing that?
I just got hired in August, so pretty new, several months in now.
Did I hear you say L.A.?
I'm sorry?
No, you're in Oakland?
Oh, Oakland, yeah.
Yeah,
Oakland.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. So the Diocese of Oakland, what stretches from where to where? It includes, I'm sure, Berkeley, et cetera. Where else? Is it a Contra Costa County as well?
Yeah, Contra Costa County is in Alameda.
In Alameda.
So where yours ends, like in Benicia, Vallejo.
Right.
So we start at Crockett, and then all the way over the southernmost tip is like Fremont.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So.
And then as far as Byron. On the Central Valley side.
So then you're hitting the Diocese of San Jose, huh?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So like where Fremont and Milpitas meet,
right.
Kind of like that,
right.
End. Yeah, yeah.
Right on 680 there. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah, 680 or I-80 too. Yeah.
Or I-80. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, that's you got good tires on your car.
I do. Yeah, and that's pretty much been my work, just going out there and visiting the parishes, and it's cool because a lot of the youth ministers that I knew and some of the lay leaders that I knew, you know, now I'm going to their parishes and just saying, like, yeah, how's it going? Like, what can we do to serve you guys, you know? But, yeah, we're going all around the diocese, really.
So would you call it a workshop, as it is in heaven?
Yeah, that's right. So I'll be going over to you guys in your diocese for a workshop on discipleship. So we're calling it As It Is in Heaven, on authentic discipleship on young adult ministry.
And this is Saturday, November 13, 12:30 p.m. to 4:30 p.m. And it's at St. John the Baptist Parish in Folsom, 307 Montrose Drive in Folsom, beautiful city of Folsom. And
yeah.
Who are you aiming the program at? Who do you want to be attending this?
Yeah, those who serve in, you know, as ministry leaders for young adult ministry, but really anyone who considers themselves as, you know, a young adult leader in their parish, right? I mean, maybe not all folks are on a paid basis or, you know, or serve in their faith formation office at their parish. But, you know, if you really consider yourself as a young adult leader or you're in young adult discipleship with other people in your parish, gosh, it'd be awesome to get some time with you and really just to get some inspiration and some practical skills and to ask really the tough questions on what are we doing as young adult leaders for our Catholic communities.
So I'm looking at the flyer, and it says, it's time that the Church of today rediscovers the ministry of radical hospitality that grew flourishing faithful communities of the ancient Church. Hospitality is a tradition and practice that deeply defined the Christian identity throughout church history. Explain that a little bit.
Yeah, so, you know, when the early church grew, you know, we're in this time where we have parishes, we have budgets, we have programs and leaders. All the early church had was their faith in Jesus Christ, you know, the Holy Spirit, and each other, and the Lord sent them out two by two to evangelize. And once the early Christian communities began, it was really just like inviting them in, inviting, you know, pagans in, or inviting those who are marginalized in, those who may have not known Jesus in.
And once in a while, they invited Jesus in without knowing it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, you know. And what marked the Christian community was just the way that they loved each other, the way that they were in communion, the way they shared their resources. But it was that radical hospitality that attracted people who may have not even known Jesus, but they definitely knew, well, this is what the community looks like. I want to be a part of that, you know?
So have we lost touch with that?
I think in a lot of ways, yeah. I think there's a lot of good effort, you know, but I also think we're asking the wrong questions, you know? Serving in parish ministry before, it was always like that effort of like, okay, what events do we put on or what's going to draw people in? And, you know, especially with the idea of the new evangelization, we're always trying to be innovative and provide new order to proclaim the gospel. And a lot of what the church does is evangelization, right? But what do we do to intentionally reach out and evangelize them the old way. And that's kind of what I was talking about. And, you know, and providing radical hospitality. It's not just putting on the events and asking people to come to us. Maybe it's a lot of us going to them, you know, and it's doing that physically too, but also doing that in a cultural sense, right? Like in youth ministry, we're working with a lot of digital native, you know, teens or, you know, the teens who grew up and just were born into a world where you could access pretty much any information from any smart devices. I remember back then when I first saw an iPhone, right? So I was kind of introduced to that world, but a lot of our young people communicate very differently because they're digital natives. They were born in a world where they had just no smart technology. So even the way we're communicating culturally, the way we operate is so different. Their sense of identity is so different. And so culturally, even though I'm younger, right, I'm in my 20s still, I still have to culturally meet them where they're at and proclaim the gospel, but also understand what are their human needs, being born in a world where they, you could access everything digitally, right? Like that, that's a little bit more effort on my end as a lay leader, but that's what radical hospitality is. It's knowing culturally how they interact and communicate, going to them and inviting them into the heart of the gospel, the heart of our communities, right? That very much present what those human needs are and the spiritual needs, but they really got to be invited in, you know?
Well, you know, you say, you know, so much information on a million subjects all at their fingertips instantaneously,
but also
so much misinformation available at the same time.
Yeah. And that goes true for any community, really. I mean, that's just one example, right? Like young adults, like I'm a millennial, and we interact wholly differently than Gen Xers do. It, you know, and some of the Gen Xers are still, you know, in their young adult years, and how do we reach out to them? And not just, and maybe this is just like thinking generationally, but maybe subcultures like, you know, ethnicities or, you know, different interests or different, you know, like the same way we follow teams and there's a subculture in that, there's subcultures for everything. And so how do we as Christians who know Jesus interact with all different kinds of people, right? And Christ calls us to be united, but unity doesn't always mean uniformity, right? And so can we take this gospel that unites all of us but bring it to different kinds of peoples and different kinds of cultures?
So at this workshop, what are you going to do? What can people expect?
Yeah, so I'm going to provide hopefully the questions that begin the conversations. It's going to be a big paradigm shift from what kind of things can you organize to what can we be for other people, right? So some spiritual inspiration and reflection from Scripture, from, you know, a huge treasury of Catholic thinkers who talked on this very subject on authentic discipleship, to challenge our understanding of who we're called to be. So some inspiration, some questions to reflect on, but also practical skills, right? Like, here are the conversations you need to have with your pastor or your parish staff, right? Working on those kind of emotional intelligence skills of how to go and approach people from their different cultures and how to bring them into a relationship with the church. So it's a lot of that initial discipleship, initial evangelization skill sets that I hope to present at the workshop.
And what do you want the participants to bring other than an open mind?
A readiness to have those conversations with other young adult leaders, you know, and if they have experience in that or if they've tried different things in their parishes, come bring those ideas, you know, that might inspire another young adult leader who might be in a different place in their ministry or who may need that encouragement, that idea that they did have too, work in a parish setting that's similar to theirs, you know. So if you're planning on coming, you know, bring an open mind, but also bring your ideas and bring your experiences because those ideas and experiences are going to kind of help shape our conversation and shape the dialogue we have as we talk about those necessary skills to go out there and invite people into discipleship.
Joseph is the coordinator of youth ministry and RCIA in the Diocese of Oakland in the Bay Area. Joseph, what do you see? What are your biggest challenges in your ministry? Both of those ministries. What are the biggest challenges you face? What are the toughest questions you get asked?
Yeah. Toughest questions, I think, would be just what. It's the broad question. It's usually the first question people ask. It's, you know, how do we keep young people in church? You know, and I think people have a lot of the answers to that question. I just think we're not always prepared for the commitment of the hard work it's going to take to bring them back in. You know, like when they say, "Oh, like what can we do? What kind of event we could put on?" And you know, it's not just the event. It's, are you willing to have those conversations? Are you willing to introduce yourself to them? Are you willing to make space in your parish event or parish ministry, you know, for them? And a lot of the times they are, you know, but it takes a lot of dedication. It takes a lot of patience. It takes a lot of extra work. And there's no silver bullet for this, right? And so that's the hardest part, really, in my work, is to convince them, like, no one promised that this is going to be easy. Is it rewarding and fulfilling? Yeah, of course it is, right? But there is no silver bullet. And when people ask, you know, what can we do to bring young people in? It's, you know, what are you willing to do? You know, it invites a bigger conversation. The biggest, you know, difficulty I face, and per se, it's like a lot of what we do offer for young people is, you know, catechetical, you know, formation, which is great. You know, a lot of us have been formed the faith, and, you know, I'm so grateful for the quality formation that I've had that it's brought a lot of ongoing conversion in my life, you know. But for the most part, you know, our young people or even people we're bringing into the church, they're not just looking for the quality catechetical answers. I think what we really should be looking for is providing a clear path of discipleship, right? We talk a lot about what it means to behave or believe as Catholics, and we're not always focusing on what it means to belong as Catholics. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not always defining clearly our values on what our Catholic communities look like or our parishes look like. It's just we presume that everyone who's there is fully on board because their butts are in the pews, you know, or they're the kids who are attending the faith formation classes. And here's the big word that I throw around. It's accompaniment. We got to be dedicated to accompanying them from distant or uninterested into the church to having that trust and curiosity, seeking out the answers, and accompanying them to, you know, they believe in this. And now, and you've seen it before, when a young person or anybody encounters Jesus and they're on fire in their faith, they want to know more and they want to know more, right? You still got to accompany them through that, you know? And that's my work in RCIA, too. It's you give them the sacraments, but there's that whole phase of mystagogia still where you're, you know, helping them discern, like, how they could continue to use their gifts for the church. That's a part of discipleship as well, you know, where we get our teams confirmed, and sometimes we say goodbye to them and you never see them again, you know? But how do we get those teams who are confirmed to now, you know, take up roles in the church, not just putting away chairs at a, you know, Knights of Columbus event or apostasy or whatever, but really an active role in our parish, and we could hear their voices and we have space for them to contribute to the life of the parish. We should be accompanying them through that as well. And so the toughest part is helping parish teams, youth ministers and RCIAs and even pastors look at it. It's not just one moment of catechesis, but it's an ongoing process of accompaniment.
Yeah, very, very well said. The questions I get sometimes, not in a formal setting, but just, you know, just talking with friends, talking with people, you know, it comes up, you know, you're on Catholic radio, or, you know, what's that about, kind of thing. And sometimes people will say, without any hostility, I don't need religion. They just kind of lump it all together, you know, not Catholic or anything else. Just I don't need religion. Like you apparently are needy and need religion. And they're not doing it in a hostile way or a demeaning way. They're just like, no, I kind of like, I'm fine. Everything's going good. I have a good job. And the kids are in school. And, you know, my car works. And I don't need religion. Mm-hmm. Do you get that at all?
Yeah, no, and that's pretty much the wider culture. But, I mean, we're seeing it. We're in a time where there's a rise of the nuns, not the religious sisters, but the, you know, the
N-O-N-E-S, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and we talk about this a lot, you know, and if you're in church ministry, if you're not in church ministry, you just kind of recognize that the culture looks a lot less Christian, and it's not a part of the regular conversations as it might have been.
Right.
50 years ago
right.
or 100 years ago. And America has a really deep religious past, and particularly Catholic past. And
sure.
It's not perfect. It's got a lot of, you know, dark spots. But at least Christianity was in culture. It was a part of the culture. But now you don't get that. And you have people who kind of, oh, wow, you're religious. That's kind of cool.
It feels
like you're an outsider or an outcast. And really, that underdog spirit is how the church grew, and I welcome that, right? When people
sure.
say, like, oh, I don't really need religion, that's a perfect opportunity for us to witness, you know? And I have no problem saying, gosh, I really need Jesus, especially in my marriage. I'm a new parent now, you know? I need Jesus, you know, for strength and, you know, being a father now and in my work now, on my drive, you know? And people have replaced Jesus with whatever all those other, you know, other things you might replace Jesus with, and some people may feel satisfied, but they may get to that point where those very finite things may not be enough anymore. And, you know, it's an opportunity for us to boldly witness to, well, you know, my God, he's always come through for me, you know?
Yeah. Well, Joseph, a complete joy to talk with you, and I know that people are going to be well served up here. If people want to sign up for this, again, it's a Leaders Day, YA Leaders Day of Reflection, Saturday, November 13th. 12:30 to 4:30 p.m. St. John the Baptist in Folsom, 307 Montrose Drive. You can contact Anthony Ta here in the Diocese of Sacramento. That's T-A is his last name, at ata@scd.org, or give Anthony a call at 916-733-0151. Joseph, we look forward to seeing you up here.
Yeah, I can't wait to be there with you guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Joseph. God bless. That's Joseph Nifable, who is coordinator of youth ministry in RCIA and will be one of the presenters here. He's from the Diocese of Oakland. Again, Saturday, November 13th, St. John the Baptist in Folsom, 12:30 to 4:30. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless.
Can I pour my heart out to a listening ear? But I see this life, it's valleys and mountains, and I think of all the roads that brought me here. Oh, that brought me here. Walking down the road. Well, I've questioned my reasons, this life I'm living. I question my ability to judge wrong from right. Well, I questioned all the things I've ever called certain. My race, my religion, my country, my mind. But the one thing I don't question is you. You really love me like you say you do. You really love me like you say you do. Significance, meaning, and relevance. Does the work I'm doing really matter at all? Well, I question my friendships, alliance, dependence. Who will still be here when I fall? But the one thing I don't.